This is the one where we meet the Doctor for the first time.
And bizarrely, he has a granddaughter.
And she in turn has two know-it-all teachers.
They travel back in time.
And meet cavemen.
Who have trouble making fire.
And issues with democracy.
It's called An Unearthly Child.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space.
Encountering Dalek, Stalinood, and the Cybertronic race.
Centaurans look like taters and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal rope. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Okay, so here we are. We're starting the first one. Welcome to Who Back When, the Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
And I'm Jack Hammer.
A.K.A. Flapjack.
A.K.A. just Jack, please.
And we're starting off with the very first William Hartnell episode ever.
It actually sent me insane. Like, yeah. seeing the Doctor from 40 years ago, it actually blew my mind.
Dude, 50 years ago.
50
years ago. That's insane. Like,
well, the main thing that strikes you immediately... First moment you see him, he's not the same guy at all.
No, he's very different. As a character, he's completely different.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've discussed this before a couple of times. We've given ourselves, like, some minor phone calls about this. We've tried not to discuss it too much to save it for this episode.
Yeah.
But basically, the Doctor is now useless, old, and an arsehole.
Yeah, he's a complete arsehole. He's also somewhat homicidal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll get to that. We're gonna go through this entire story arc.
We'll try and keep it broadly chronological so that this is possible to follow in any way.
But, a priori, let's face it, the guy's a complete douchebag.
Yes.
And incompetent.
So let's try and get our head around the context of how this story begins. So Susan seems to have been in school for a while.
Yeah, Susan is... Oh, hang on, wait, we got to introduce Susan. Sorry. Basically, we start off not so much with the Doctor or even Susan. We start off with these two adults who are teachers at a school, and they both have a student called Susan, who is like a wunderkind.
Well, she is and she isn't.
Yeah, okay, that's
true. She doesn't seem to understand the most basic of concepts, yet she's like a master in astrophysics.
She's a master in astrophysics, but she... like
she thinks England's on the decimal
exactly.
system.
So the two teachers...
That
one
doesn't
is...
sound so ridiculous, but back in 1963, when this was broadcast, England was not on the decimal system.
Exactly. So, well, the two teachers, one is a science teacher, the other
call,
one is a history
by the way,
teacher.
Doctor Who, right?
Yeah, well done!
Yeah, well done.
Well done! So the two teachers, one is a science teacher, the other one is a history teacher, and the history one is saying that, well, she seems to kind of not really get chronology.
She seems a little bit mixed up, like between the year 2030 and 1963.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These two teachers, they're Barbara, the history teacher, Ian, the science teacher, they basically decide, well, she's a bit of a conundrum. Let's figure out what she's all about.
So for some reason, they decide to follow her home.
Yeah, not creepy at all. This is not creepy at all.
On a dark night, like inside a car with the headlights turned off in the fog.
Let's not forget, the episode actually starts off with the longest, most useless shot of a policeman just walking around in the fog outside Mr. Foreman's junkyard,
yeah.
Which makes no sense whatsoever, because the policeman has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, absolutely. But clearly, so here's my problem, like, just to very begin with.
Yeah.
So, obviously it's set up that the Doctor and Susan are moving around, like, back and forth in time from place to place, and she's like a traveller. But she seems to have been at that school for long enough that she's actually acquired a very strong relationship with these two teachers.
Yeah, and she's not that old.
Yeah, and she's not old at all. It's as if they've been there a long time.
However, there's one thing which I'm going to say probably they hadn't figured out at this time, but it is possible that she could have, now that we know a bit more about the Doctor, she could have regenerated. She could have had completely different lives.
That is completely possible.
Yeah.
How did she get on the school register?
This guy who lives in a freaking junkyard manages to fake papers for us.
For presumably all of, what, 2 years max.
Oh, and have. By the way, can I just say...
British nationals? I mean, they got passports?
Yeah, not just that, Duke. They don't know his name. We have lots of puns of, like, what's his name? Doctor Who?
Well,
but surely she must have a surname. She's registered as a student of this school.
Well, she is given a surname. So at school, her name is Susan Foreman.
Wait, is it really?
Yeah. Okay. It is. And when they turn up and actually meet this weird-looking, older, paedophilic man, they refer to him as Mr. Foreman. And he says, Doctor, please. And he says, Doctor Foreman.
And he goes, Doctor, No.
Foreman, you silly child.
No, he says, No, they refer to him as Dr. Foreman. He goes, Doctor Who?
Yeah.
So that's like the first of several Doctor Who puns.
Yeah, and it turns into a 50-year-long pun.
Yeah, it really...
That is still going to this day. In the last episode we watched, what is it, June 2013?
Yeah.
The Doctor's name needs to be uttered to open his
tomb. But not just that, like now...
And we still don't know what it is.
Now the fact that the Doctor has a name that is a secret is of incredible importance. So obviously lots of theories have been devised as to what his name is or how you would pronounce it, because it would be Gallifreyan, right? So what is his name? And one of the theories would be Dr. Foreman.
But bizarrely, he has a granddaughter whose name is actually just Susan. Which leads me to think that the Doctor's name may just be Dave. Or Simon. Or better yet, Keith. Keith the Doctor. It doesn't have to be like Gibboleth. It could be Steve.
Yeah, for all we know, Steve, Susan means something else in Gallifreyan, or possibly it's like, but the Doctor, you know, maybe it's like Cher, or Madonna. Maybe it's just like Bono.
But he refers to her as Susan, and it's very natural and very, you know, that is her name. Her name is Susan.
Yeah, plausible deniability. Anyway, so they follow the two teachers, they get in the car, they follow this wunderkind child to a junkyard, they meet the Doctor.
Yes.
And at first he claims not to know anything about some girl who's wandered into the junkyard.
You're seeing things, boy.
Yeah. And they threaten to call the police or go and fetch the police. And he's like, you know what? You go do that. Yeah. Go get the police. Tell them that I've locked up a girl in a police box in a junkyard and see what they say.
I shall be here to see you fail, and I will laugh. Yeah, it's great.
And yeah, then Susan, who is inside the TARDIS, inside the police box, which is the TARDIS. I'm presuming that our listeners know this. So she opens the door because she hears someone outside and goes, "Oh, grandfather, are you there?" And blah blah. The teachers see them, they storm into the TARDIS, all of a sudden, they've basically been alien abducted.
It is like a proper abduction as well, because they really do want to leave. It's not as if they accidentally got trapped in the TARDIS. The Doctor closes the doors behind them.
Yeah, and refuses to let them out,
starts laughing, and takes them off in space-time.
Yeah.
It's a kidnapping.
There's no doubt about it. He is kidnapping them. Okay, but not just that, he's contradicting himself, because he's saying, like, no, go and get the police and tell them this actually quite realistic and plausible story about an old man who's abducted a girl and locked her in a box.
Yeah. Joseph Fritz?
Yeah. But he won't let them get out of the TARDIS because they may go to the authorities and tell them there's a time-traveling professor or doctor whose grandchild is also in said time machine. And
his granddaughter, who is enrolled in the local school, has been so for a long time,
is in fact an alien time traveller. Yeah. That is more plausible, according to him. So he won't let them out. Instead, he sets the TARDIS going, and they travel back. This is the end of the first of four installments of this story.
Yeah.
We should say, by the way, the story itself is called An Unearthly Child. The first episode is An Unearthly Child as well.
And bizarrely, I mean, we've described essentially nothing there, but that is all that happens.
That's it.
In the first episode.
Yeah.
It's
exposition.
It's very slow moving. I mean, that's the first thing that strikes you. Just talking about the first episode, and you know, it applies to all of them, really.
Dude, imagine seeing
this.
Very
slow moving.
Yeah, but imagine seeing this for the very first time, and then having to wait a week to see what happens next.
Absolutely.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because nothing has happened in this episode.
No, nothing happened at all.
It's 20 minutes long. They're a lot shorter than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot less is happening. But it's the pilot episode, so fair enough.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely terrific.
End credits roll as they travel back in time.
And a caveman appears as a shadow across the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, episode 2, called The Cave of Skulls, was it?
It was The Cave of Skulls. No.
Yeah, The Cave of Skulls.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Cave of Skulls, and there are cavemen. They travel back in time. There are lots of cavemen. They all speak English. And
very bad English.
Very bad English, but not just that. they also act out the most poorly constructed dialogue ever penned by man.
Yeah.
So we see these cavemen, it's basically like winter is approaching, i.e. the Ice Age is basically approaching,
mm-hmm.
and they're afraid of, if they can't make fire, they're going to die. And like the previous elder made fire...
Which, in itself, doesn't make that much sense. So there are cavemen, presumably they have been surviving for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Without fire.
No.
They're immediate elders.
Yeah.
So there was a guy who could make fire.
Yeah.
But if everybody had been able to do it for the last 1,000 years, they would know how to make fire. They've been perfectly fine without fire.
Yeah, but now the Ice Age is turning up, and they basically...
How do you know it's the Ice Age?
Well, okay, fine.
It's a winter. Okay. How do you know it's the Ice Age? How do you even know it's Earth?
Because the Doctor says so.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, okay. I think so. Yeah. He says... He doesn't say where they are. He just says, we've travelled back in time.
Yeah.
That's all he says. And basically, like, the TARDIS has just stopped, right? He doesn't know exactly where he is, because in this version of Doctor Who, he needs to have very, very specific data, as he says, to plot a course through time.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he didn't have all the information at hand when he turned it on. Fucking well done, Doctor!
Well, he was in a panic, to be fair, because he was desperately trying to to kidnap two people.
How long did he spend in the relative present of 1963?
But he wasn't planning to leave. He didn't think he'd been discovered.
Yeah, but he must have known it was London in 1963.
No, because the Doctor, as established, is crap. He doesn't know anything. He's got no prior knowledge of anything. He's completely lost in London. Like, he doesn't integrate with society. As far as we know, he's a hermit living in a box.
True.
So I think it's quite plausible, given how rubbish the Doctor is, that he would have made no provision for this whatsoever.
But there's no reverse engineering either. Like, Susan clearly could have just gone, okay, listen, Grandad, the thing is, it was, I don't know, September 14th at 3:15 p.m. or something, and mm-hmm. blah, blah. But anyway, that's not established. They land somewhere in the past. It is clearly Earth because they've just travelled through time, not space.
Okay.
They are, so it might even be like London X years
BC. Yeah, it could be actually the I.M. Foreman scrapyard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Although, if they'd gone back that far to the time of cavemen, there probably wouldn't have been any people in Britain.
That's true.
Yeah.
But we're talking about an alternate version of history where cavemen speak English. So anyway...
Clearly the writers of Doctor Who had investigated the linguistics of the country and had taken on board one of the theories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, getting back to the episode, they leave the TARDIS to go exploring because the Doctor really just wants to go out and explore, take samples and things. Here something happens that I found fantastic. Okay, he's kidnapped by cavemen, or by a caveman.
Well, caveman knocks him out.
Yeah, knocks him out and drags him back to the cave. But...
And that was Cal.
That was Cal. But here's the cool thing. The Doctor was smoking a pipe.
Mm.
He was smoking!
Mm.
The Doctor was smoking a pipe. And the caveman sees him breathing fire.
Or fire from his finger.
Fire from his finger, yeah.
Yeah, which is a match.
Basically, he thinks, okay, this guy can teach me how to make fire, and if I can then make fire, I will be the leader of my tribe, and we will
survive
the winter.
That isn't actually what he says. He actually thinks that fire comes from this man's finger, and what he wants to do is keep this man, because he's a fire-emitting being.
True.
Keep him in a corner and say, fire, and then fire occurs.
Yeah. And up until now, the only thing we've seen of the caveman is basically this guy, Cal. No, that's Zar. Okay, so
No, it's not. It's Cal. Cal knocks the Doctor out, brings him back as like an offering. Here's, I can make fire. Your leader, Zar, he no make fire. He try many years, he no make fire. I bring you fire.
Yeah. So, by the way, just thank you for exemplifying the crap dialogue of this episode. Because,
it's all like that.
Yeah, because
all of it.
Scenes of that nature go on for like 10 minutes, where they basically just say, I make fire, I be leader, I tribe leader.
I
they say
man.
That over and over again for
I
fucking 10
man.
Minutes.
I good leader, he no good leader.
Yeah, yeah. And then on an endless
loop. I save you in winter.
It's great. Well written.
Over and over and over again.
Okay, so let's just say this as well. There are four main cave people. There's quote-unquote the good guy, Zar.
I don't know if he's good, but yeah Zar.
He's the guy who's trying to make fire because he remembers his... Was it his father?
His father,
his father made fire before. The fire-making thing has clearly been kept secret. They're no longer known to anyone. He's trying to just rub a stick with his hands.
Yeah.
Because he kind of saw something at some point, but he hasn't put one and one together. But anyway, so then there's the outsider in a way.
Yeah. Cal. So he turned up to the encampment like last winter on his own. He'd been like either kicked out by his old tribe or the rest of his tribe had died.
Yeah.
And he got taken in by this new tribe.
Exactly. And he's now basically trying to be the new leader.
Yeah.
So he's the bad guy. He has, like, a female counterpart. Or, like, sorry, there is a female counterpart to either of them. Yeah, and her name is Hur, H-U-R, which, by the way...
I don't know if I call her a counterpart.
She's trying to be the queen.
She's the trophy wife. I mean, she's like the one that gets handed to the leader, you know, for raping and pillaging and, you know,
basically
generally being a caveman wife.
Wait, whose side is she on? The good or bad guy?
Initially, she's on the good guy side, but she will... I think she's always on the good guy side.
Yeah, you're right. She's always on Zar's side.
But her father wants her to be given to the tribe leader.
Her father, by the way, who looks exactly like Will Ferrell.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
yeah, so if Cal were to become the new leader, she would have to be the wife.
Yeah.
Because she is the wife of the leader. That's her role.
Yeah. But so Cal, the guy, the bad guy, the new guy, he knocks out the doctor, drags him back to the cave, basically tries to get him to make fire. And the doctor at this point, in an incredible breach of the Prime Directive, says, let me go. I will make fire for you. I'll teach you. I will change. I will alter the course of human history by teaching you people how to make fire.
Yeah. And in that one sentence, he encapsulates himself,
yeah.
which is a completely selfish, selfish bastard.
Yeah. Complete disregard of... like,
he's literally,
mankind's
when they say to him, make a spiral, we'll kill you, pretty much, he goes for his matches. That's all he wants to do. He just wants to make them fire and fuck off.
Yeah.
But he can't, because he's lost his matches.
He's lost his matches, and he's like, yeah, take me back to my cave, and I will make fire for you. Like, oh, wow, yeah, show them a time machine as well. Why don't you fuck up all of mankind?
It's like the opening of Into Darkness.
So, Susan, Ian, and Barbara, they go looking for the doctor. They find that he's been kidnapped. They find the cavemen. They find the cave and blah.
Well, they get kidnapped themselves.
Oh, yeah, sorry. They get kidnapped. They get kidnapped as well.
Okay, they get kidnapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rather than being freed in exchange for fire, all of them are locked up in what is basically a dungeon. It's a cave full of skulls.
And therefore...
the episode name, The Cave of Skulls. Very clever.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
For more than one reason, as we'll go on to discuss, it is actually... it's really stupid that they...
Oh my god, it's so stupid. Oh,
I can't even...
This is do you know what this is? This is basically a Hanna-Barbera episode.
Yeah.
This could have been, like, on the Jetsons.
Without the humour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's taken incredibly seriously. One thing that... we didn't mention, but that it, just out of kind of nerd service, I want to say this. When they first arrive, Susan and the Doctor both remark on the fact that the TARDIS still looks like a police box.
Yes.
Like, it's established that it shouldn't.
I wonder if they ever talk about that again, because it just seems from that moment onwards that they are just fully acceptant that the TARDIS is a police box.
Yeah. It's like, oh, right, so the cloaking device, basically, is malfunctioning.
Yeah.
But let's not fix it. Let's just leave it as it is.
The way I see that, I mean, they've probably been in London for, as discussed, a few years.
Yeah.
Therefore, the TARDIS is probably stuck in some sort of loop.
Yeah, it's not the first time that we find in the series that something just gets stuck.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that further on.
Oh my god. I can't hold it in.
No, wait, don't spoil it. I cannot wait until we record episode 3. This is going to be epic.
It's so great.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, Susan even actually points out it's looked like a column at one point, a Greek column, I think she says, and a chair.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't figure out what it was. She's an old Greek column and a Sudan chair?
I seem to remember this. It was some sort of chair.
Some sort of chair.
Was it actually a king's throne or something like that? It was something weird.
I don't know. Anyway, okay, so it doesn't matter. Oh, a sultan's chair.
Yeah.
Bingo, there we go. Sense. All right, so That's the end of episode 2. Episode 3, The Forest of Fear.
The forest is very frightening.
It is quite frightening. So they're still in the cave, and while the cavemen are all asleep, the one other character, an old lady, like the elder
woman.
So this
is the fourth character we didn't mention before, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Up the character.
The elder woman.
The elder woman, who has actually seen the old tribal leader. So
make fire. And she refuses to show either Zar or Cal how to make fire.
Which is very interesting. Her argument, essentially, is that fire brings problems to humans. People start fighting and there are lots of issues. Which is very interesting. This episode was recorded in 1963. You've got the threat of the Cuban Missile Crisis, etc., etc. You know, it seems to be the answer from the Doctor Who writer's perspective is man should never have even had fire in the first place.
I think, actually, at this point, we can say
nuclear arms.
Yeah.
It's too dangerous.
At this point, we've actually seen the first three episodes, and I would like to say that throughout, basically, like the one consistent philosophy is that technology is evil.
Yeah,
and fire obviously being like the start of it. It's like the this old woman encapsulates that belief.
And she's a very wise old woman.
Yeah.
She understands that it's better to not have fire at all than to have people fighting over it.
Yeah.
Which is a comment on the time.
Yeah.
Really. Which is very interesting. So, Doctor Who changed the world.
Yeah. Well, tried anyway. So
Anyway,
so while the cavemen are asleep, the old woman, she wakes up and we think at first that she's going to go into the cave and kill everyone because she's got one of those stone, like a rock knife type thing. But it turns out she actually wants to free them and says, as long as you don't make fire, I will let you go.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the doctor's like, you know what? I'm not going to make fire ever. It's okay, just let me go.
He has no morals at all.
He is a complete turncoat.
And they basically in Italian. Like, they open up the doors.
Sorry, Italians.
No. So she... I love Italians. I've got loads of Italian friends. You are turncoats. So she opens up the door for them, lets them out, and they wander out into the Forest of Fear.
Into the Forest of Fear. And then Zar and the woman, they wake up. They go into the cave. He kind of throttles the old woman for a little bit until she reveals that, she let them go. And then Zar and her set off into the Forest of Fear as well to follow following them.
Yeah.
They track them down, but
Zar hurts himself.
Well, sometimes. He's attacked by an animal.
Is it an animal?
Yeah, okay. He's attacked by some sort of animal. Actually, you know what? He pussies out completely.
Yes, it can't have been that bad.
It can't have been that bad.
We're about to say next, which is... So he's,
oh my God, this is so good.
He's down on the floor.
On the ground, in the forest.
On the ground.
Yeah.
And the group notice that this has happened. So the group being the Doctor, his granddaughter, Zar...
Susan and Ian. Barbara and Ian.
Barbara and Ian.
Yeah.
They look back, and the Doctor's reaction is basically, oh good, he's dying. Yeah. Let's run! Like, he's just so happy that they're making it out of there.
Oh, and wait a minute, dear listener of this podcast, did you think that was the end of him being a complete asshole? Well, guess again, because that's not the end. So Ian and Barbara, the teachers, they basically go, no, we have to help him. And Susan also is like, oh no, in fact, wait, I wrote down the quotes. Okay, Susan tells the Doctor, you treat everything and everyone as something less important than yourself.
Absolutely.
So,
although to be fair, he treats Susan well. Like Susan's like an extension of himself. But yes, everything else is just his plaything or his thing to
his
be
inferior.
Used to escape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but the rest of the group, they convince him to stay around.
Yeah.
They go and help this caveman while he's on the ground.
Who cannot have been that badly hurt. Because these two people, not medically trained, the doctor doesn't help at all.
No.
These two people, not medically trained, they're teachers. One of them's a history teacher.
One of them's a science teacher.
Basically, by putting a bit of water on his forehead and patting him, they managed to get him completely better and revive him.
And then after a while,
caveman
fast forward until later, he's well enough to fight and things.
Oh, yeah. And win the fight.
But at this point, he's just completely knocked out. Not knocked out. He's on the ground, whinging.
Yeah.
And the doctor at this point takes hears a rock knife and attempts to murder him.
It is like cold-blooded murder of a man down on the ground, bleeding to death, for all we know. The Doctor picks up a rock and tries to bash the back of his head in.
Yeah, at which point Ian goes, "What are you trying to do?" And the Doctor just goes like, "Oh, I was just going to
just cut checking my watch."
Yeah, I was just going to cut away part of his claws to expose the wound to water or something.
But the intention was clear. It was cold-blooded murder. The Doctor was attempting cold-blooded murder.
Kick me while I'm down? No. Stab me in the face with a rock knife while I'm down. So they help him, and you think that at this point, okay, it's fine, he's now going to let them go, but no, because he knows they can make fire. They get kidnapped again, and the Forest of Fear ends up where the last episode ended up, namely in the Cave of Freaking Skulls.
Yeah.
Boom.
Which is becoming kind of a depressing place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Does that take us to number...
I think that takes us to four. Where does four begin?
Four. Part four is called The Firemaker. And, okay, so part four starts off with the Doctor trying to reason with the cavemen.
Yes.
And that doesn't go very well.
No.
They get locked up in the cave again, and he makes fire for... No, sorry, they just make a fire.
Yeah, basically the group at this point are very upset in the Cave of Skulls.
Yeah.
And they're shouting at Zar and her. Like, for God's sake, we saved you. Why the hell are you holding us captive? Which is a fair point.
Yeah. But this dude, he isn't really... Yeah, big
really,
on returning favours.
Yeah,
so he just locks them
really
up, puts a guard outside the cave,
mm-hmm.
and, okay, fine. So they're in the cave, it's cold, they make a fire. A little bit later, Zar goes to the guard, goes, "Stay here, don't let anyone in," goes into the cave and sees the fire. And when he sees the fire, it's like, holy shit balls, this is going to be my ticket to being a leader. And the Doctor... Oh! Actually, re-emphasizing the whole technologies and everything thing, the Doctor tells him, the guy who makes fire is actually the least important person in our tribe, because everyone knows how to make it, so the person who makes it is not our leader.
Yeah, I remember that quote. It's not logical at all, is it? Like, so he's the least important person because everyone can do it.
Everyone can do it.
That's so like saying the guy who walks is the least important person in the world because everyone can walk. It's not true, is it? Just because everybody can do something doesn't make the person who does it completely useless.
It's
everybody can murder someone.
It's more like the chef is the least important person because we all know how to make enough food to survive.
I know,
but we get someone else to do it for us.
I know what the point is meant to be,
yeah.
But I don't think it quite works. It's
fine.
The point I'm making.
All right,
it's poor diet.
Everything can't resonate with the flap. So,
God, don't call me the flap.
I'm going to call you the flap.
Please don't call me the flap.
Doesn't matter. It's too late to change it now. So anyway, he sees the fire. There's a huge row outside because there's still no fire outside the Cave of Skulls. So Ian basically goes, "Take this." He lights a stick on fire. Says to Zar, "Take this and show it to your people, and then you will be the leader." I was like, "Oh. Oh, right, wait, so we've actually turned 180 degrees now, because now all of a sudden the guy who can bring fire is the leader. Thanks, Ian, for screwing up our philosophy."
Well, which is the point I was making.
Yeah.
Because Ian, by the way, is clearly the leader.
Yeah.
As I said to you just before this episode, he is the most masculine man ever
to
wear a cardigan.
Yeah. No, oh my God, Ian's cardigan should win an award.
He is absolutely the alpha male to end all alpha males. Like, he's quiet... A bit sullen at times, but in the end, he gets the fucking job done.
Yeah, just wait until we get to episode two.
He is the
because
he
is going to out-hunk everyone.
Oh my God, like, he makes the Doctor look like a little stupid pussy.
Yeah.
on almost every occasion.
True.
Like, if you imagine, like, a recent example of the Doctor, like, companion relationship, imagine the Doctor being made to look like a stupid little pussy by Rory. Just wouldn't happen, would it?
No.
Just wouldn't happen.
No, but the Doctor's now
Rory
turned into
retarded
this...
retarded next to the
Yeah, but the Doctor is now this omniscient alpha male, whereas back then he was, well, neither. So anyway, hang on. Let's continue with the episode. Yeah, so Zar shows the fire to the others. He's now the leader, basically.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait, hang on. We've completely missed the tussle. So while he's
Did we miss the tussle?
Yeah, we've missed the tussle. So he's inside the cave. He sees the fire. They're having the little talk about, like, the one who makes the fire is the least important. At which point, Cal, who's outside the cave, goes up to the god. Jason Statham's him and goes into the cave. At which point, they have, like, the most brutal tussle ever. They
it's actually really horrible. And you know, it was the 60s and all Doctor Who episodes were taken in one cut. That was probably actually a fight. Yeah. Like, they actually probably were punching each other in the face and bashing.
Oh, dude. The guy who plays Zod died. So, So Zar brutally kills.
Brutally murders him. Grabs him by the ankle and takes him through the cave of skulls.
Yeah.
Like a la Achilles. Like, it's amazing.
They fist fight. Then all of a sudden, Cal has some sort of hammer. Where did that come from, by the way?
No, he gets a massive, massive rock.
No, wait, that's later on. Okay. So he has some sort of hammer, at which point Zar picks up the stereotypical caveman, like, club!
Yeah.
And breaks the hammer in two, punches Cal all over the place, picks up a huge rock, crushes his skull, and drags his dead freaking corpse by the ankle across the cave past Susan, who is a schoolchild.
Mm. It's pretty gnarly. Given that this was a children's TV show at the time, like, it's become a family show. It was specifically a children's show.
No wonder, like, the children of then, the adults of today, are fucked up. So,
if you think about who was a child at that time, I mean, we're talking about
this is 50 years ago.
80s banker wankers. They would have grown up on that. Like, the whole Thatcherite era is probably caused by the gruesomeness of Doctor
Who. Oh my god, I knew we were going to get into this. Okay, let's not.
Like, those money-grubbing little twats who worked in the city in the 80s, they were like that as a result of the 60s Doctor Who.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, now we've paused that blame.
Now we know.
So he kills Cal. Ian goes, here, show this fire to your people and it'll be fine. He does. Zar goes out with the fire. He's the leader. They still will not let them go. They are now in the cave. They're being fed by Zar. And basically made to stay there for the rest of their days to make more fire, right? What happens next? They escape. How do they escape?
Doesn't Zar help them?
No. Susan has a brilliant idea.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. This is the best.
So
this is the best shit idea ever.
She basically goes over, finds one of the skulls, like, shoves a stick through it and sets it on fire. And goes, Grandad, it almost looks alive.
Yeah,
it's practically me.
Which, by the way, it doesn't look alive at all.
No.
So they put four of these sticks with four skulls ablaze in a row, assuming that the cavemen are so freaking dumb that they would look at them and assume that they are the group.
But it wouldn't even be dumbness that would cause that.
Blindness.
It's a huge leap of logic for them to look at some burning skulls on sticks and automatically think that's them. I mean, a thought process has to go in there. Yeah. It's not...
But you know what?
It's not just straight dumbness. Yeah, it's like craziness.
Yeah, but it transpires it wasn't so far-fetched because that is precisely what happens.
Oh,
and while they're marvelling at these burning craniums, Susan, Ian, Barbara and the Doctor manage to escape. And then one of the sticks falls over. All of a sudden, boom, they put it together. They go, oh, it turns out they were just burning skulls. We are in a cave that is named after them, after all.
And they worked that out because one of the sticks fell over.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. It's not
hello, it's hello. Really? Anyway.
So they figure out it was a trick, and they set off into the Forest of Fear after them, which is the best chase scene ever. They are clearly not running, they're just standing, jogging in place in front of the camera while someone's throwing palm leaves in their faces.
Yeah, and they're waving their arms around and flailing like mercilessly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they get away, though.
Yeah.
They get to the TARDIS, the cavemen start throwing spears at the TARDIS, but the TARDIS disappears, and the episode ends with...
Them leaving and turning up in...
On Skaro. Yeah.
They look out the little televised thing, which is really high-tech for them.
Yeah.
and they see this weird forest.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And that's it. No. They leave the TARDIS, and the Doctor asks Susan, have you checked the radiation meter?
Oh, yeah. And they look at it for about 3 seconds, and she goes, yeah, it's absolutely perfect. Turns around, 1 second later, the thing goes haywire and goes, like, you're going to die, there's so much radiation. If only she had hung around for 2 more seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could have avoided the whole sorry business.
How ironic that a time-travelling alien should be in too much of a rush.
Yeah.
But what a cliffhanger to end on.
Absolute cliffhanger.
And that's the end of the first episode, or the first story.
So.
An Unearthly Child. So
to sum up, let's have a little discussion about what we think about all of that.
Then. Okay. Go for it.
Well, I would just like to say, I mean, this was the first time I'd watched a really old Doctor Who. I was absolutely hooked.
Me too.
The first time I saw it wasn't like, I know we've done a lot of laughing throughout this episode, and there are certain things about it that are frankly ridiculous.
Yeah, we're kind of emphasising the ridiculousness of it, but it is a really good story.
I was absolutely gripped. Yeah. I honestly was gripped.
Like, how much of that was nostalgia, though?
None of it, because I'm not, as
yeah, but you're nostalgic for the Doctor in general.
I guess. No, I actually think it was a really good story. And like, there's a lot of suspense, and I think the fact it's so slow actually added to the suspense.
I agree.
It was a different kind of relationship I had with that Doctor to the relationship I have with the Doctor now.
I think...
Like, now it's like, boom, 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 explosion, blah, 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 blah. Like, and it's really exciting and fast-paced.
Yeah, but I think...
Back then, it was like a drama.
But I think one of the main differences, not just in terms of, like, okay, what's the ambience of the episode, but in the pacing of the episode and the setting of the episode, is budget. Right now, it's a huge thing. They have a huge budget, and there are like multiple locations. Whereas in this case, in 1963, in this pilot story, what makes the story kind of lame is is that it's the same two parts repeated over and over and over again. They are kidnapped. They escape through the forest. They're kidnapped. They escape through the forest.
Yeah. Mm.
And in between, we have the same cutscene of the caveman over and over and over again.
I don't know. I don't think.
But that's fine. It's the pilot story.
Problem is a repetition. I mean, you know, like the tale of Sisyphus, it just goes over and over again. But it's really poignant. And you know, I think there's a lot of you know, historical things that we can learn from watching Doctor Who in the 60s. It tells us a lot about society at the time. And I think.
Sure.
I think when it came out, I mean, I'm talking to my mum about this because she was there. She watched the first ever Doctor Who's, and she was relaying to me her absolute excitement
and marvel,
and fear and marvel.
Yeah,
and I can see it. I can see why somebody would feel that way.
Yeah, agreed.
You know,
what do you think of the Doctor? Because I think I'm going to say, even though the Doctor is completely different, I freaking love William Hartnell.
Oh, I love the Doctor. The thing that's great about this Doctor is you never know what he's thinking. You never know what he's going to do. He's like a bizarre character, as an alien probably should be.
Yeah, makes him, to be honest, a lot more entertaining to watch as a character. Not necessarily as an actor or whatever, but as a character, because you don't know that he's always going to be on the good guy side. You don't know that he's always going to say the right thing or know the answer to
it. And you don't quite understand his intentions.
Yeah.
It's, what's the word? It's kind of...
quizzical, puzzling. Yeah. He's a conundrum. He's what he's looking for. I don't know what
he's
looking for.
He's an enigma.
He's enigmatic.
The Doctor is an enigma.
Yeah.
Which is how he should have always remained, probably.
Yeah.
Now we kind of know the Doctor. We know his character. We know he's, like, for good. And we know that he cares about humanity and he wants to save the Earth.
In fact, yeah, now he cares more about humanity than any other race, it seems.
Yeah.
Whereas back then, he seemed to not care about humanity at all.
Not at all.
No.
No, it was absolutely the other way around. Like, he was taking little samples of other creatures and other species and, like, cared about them. Humanity, it was just like, to a penny.
Fuck off.
Which is exactly how an alien should treat us.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I love this Doctor. I love William Hartnell. I think he's great.
Okay. One more question before we go into ratings. So, Susan, he's got a granddaughter. What do you think of the granddaughter?
So, obviously, it's quite interesting that he has a granddaughter. Because obviously that implies the Doctor, at some point, had sex, had a family.
We don't know what happened to, like, the generation in between, by the way.
No, we don't know. We're not told anything about Susan's mother.
No.
It seems as though she'd been completely raised by her grandfather, actually. Because of the things she says, like, in later episodes as well, it seems as though he raised her.
Yeah, very much so.
I think she could be better, actually. She's a bit of a screamer.
She's a lot of a screamer.
She's a lot of a screamer. And she actually mentioned this recently herself in an interview. She was just like, she sees the Doctor now and his companions, and they see something really weird, and they go, ooh, that's beautiful, that's amazing.
Yeah, whereas and back she, then it was more like horror and terror.
It was like, ah, let's run!
Yeah.
And she's the kind of, she's the one who does that in the episode. She's the one who screams and gets upset and gets touched on the back and starts running.
I think that's mainly because she's the child character.
It's not her fault, but no. She is a little bit...
It's not even a question of like 1963 sexism, because Barbara is a lot more independent, a lot stronger.
Yeah, she's a strong-willed woman.
Yeah, very, very strong character.
Yeah. You know, I like the actress. I think she plays the part. She is a child.
Yeah.
You know, she plays the part of a child well. But
yeah.
She's not what you call like a modern day companion. She doesn't really have like a mind of her own.
No.
Which is fine.
Ian and Barbara are more regular companions.
We'll find out a bit more about Ian and Barbara in the next episode.
Yeah, so stay tuned.
Anyway, we've probably done like 40 minutes now, so we should probably get round to ratings.
So just to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, well, let's face it, probably just gentlemen. we're going to be rating every episode on a scale from 0.0 to 5.0. Okay.
Absolutely.
And
with single one place decimal points in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flappy, your rating of An Unearthly Child.
I've got to say, because I watched this, you know, obviously I was watching them in order, so it was the first one I watched, it really drew me in.
Yeah.
So I've got to give it extra points for that. There is some budget production stuff going on, and the woman, what's her name again?
Barbara.
She misses quite a few lines.
Yeah.
And obviously, because it was the 60s, they did everything in one
take.
They had no budget for extra film, even. So when she stumbles the hell over her lines, they just left it in.
It's okay, it stays in the picture.
But that gave it quite an odd charm.
Yeah.
But because it drew me in so well, I would like to give this a flapjack 3.9 out of 5.
You know what? I was going to say 3.8.
Yeah. On the same page there.
Yeah. I'm giving this a 3.8. I think it's a great start. I'm super hooked. I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of it. And you know what? I don't mind Susan that much.
I don't mind her. I'm just saying she's a bit, she's a bit of a nothing character.
Yeah. The reason I'm not giving this a higher mark is because I think the story is a little bit repetitive, and the reason I'm not giving it a lower mark is because I know what this series is turning into, and I love this as a start to it.
Absolutely. And, you know, with any series you begin with, like when it's starting right at the beginning, you do need to have a slow exposition episode.
Yeah.
So we were talking about Walking Dead earlier, just as an example.
Yeah.
The first episode is slow. It builds up slowly, and then you get more stuff later in the series. And for what this is, you know, leading us into Doctor Who, I think it does a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Actually, one extra note. Based on what you just said, the reboot, the 2005 reboot with Eccleston, for very many people, in fact, probably for most Doctor Who watchers or viewers, was the first ever Doctor Who they ever saw.
Yeah.
Right? And it starts very differently. It's just action. There are the Autons, and it's super-duper action-packed, and the companion, while strong, is very much a screamer, and I don't think it's as impactful as this.
No.
This is much better.
This has a much quieter, more subversive edge to it.
Yeah.
And as a drama, this is a better lead-in than the 2005
one. One might even say it has an edge of darkness.
Oh, what a cock you are. But yes, let's say that.
Yeah. Stay tuned for episode 3, The Edge of Darkness. Anyway, that said... check out the website, whobackwhen.com. Follow us on Twitter. He is at...
One Too Many Mornings.
Yeah, for the spelling of that, check the show notes. I am at Ponken, P-O-N-K-E-N. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. And subscribe and rate and blah, blah, blah. See you in the next episode. Ciao.
Rock on.
Are you gonna steal my catchphrases at the end of every episode?
All of them.
I hate you. Bye-bye.
Whobackwhen.